Blog Talk Radio.
I'm your host, Brian Tarvin, joined tonight with Chris Rickett. We have so much to talk about tonight, Chris. Are you ready, bud?
I'm ready, Tarvino. Been a long week at work already, even though we were off Monday. Always, when you come back from a holiday weekend, it seems like you get just slammed with work. So it's been kind of testy this week, but ready to do the show, and let's get it.
That's all right. The testier, the better, man. I just came off 10 days vacation, so 2 days back at work, I feel like a zombie. I'm still trying to gather myself, so glad to have the show tonight. And, you know, just to kind of recap before we start, the call-in number 646-716-5564. And call in, and Chris, you want to go ahead and tell them about the chat room?
Yeah, we've got the chat room. It's up and running, so feel free to weigh in the chat room. Let us know if there's any topics you want to hit on tonight, and give us your thoughts and feedback on the show. So just looking forward to hearing from everybody.
Well, man, this is going to be a great one, Chris. We have tonight, you know, last Wednesday we did the Tennessee Volunteers football breakdown, went over their schedule predictions. Tonight we're going over the Alabama Crimson Tide, man. And all I can tell you, listeners out there, if you love Alabama or if you hate them, man, they are loaded. So we're going to go over Alabama. We're going to talk a little NBA playoffs. The lottery was tonight for the NBA. We'll hit on that for just a second. And also want to get into a discussion, and we want all the feedback we can get about the playoffs this year in college football, about who's wanting what kind of format. So it's just going to be a great show, Chris. You ready to rock?
Let's do it.
All right, man, we'll just start out. You know, NBA playoffs, they're current, so we're going to start with the NBA playoffs. San Antonio last night took a commanding 2-0 lead in this series over Oklahoma City. And Oklahoma City played a great game, Chris, and it's just they gave it all they could, but it still wasn't enough to beat San Antonio. So I predicted OKC to lose the first two on San Antonio, but I really do expect Oklahoma City to turn this series back around. So I expect them to win both games in OKC. What are you seeing in this series so far?
Yeah, it definitely appears that the home team will have the advantage in this series. You know, I mean, both the Spurs and the Thunder have played really well at home. You know, last night when I'm watching the game, it just, to me, the big thing that I saw was how many open shots the Spurs got. I mean, it just seems like there was just such crisp ball movement, and every shot that they had was relatively easy. It just seems like the Thunder didn't make them work nearly as hard as they should. And that's the kind of big concern for me right now for the Thunder is that defense. I mean, they've got to find a way to slow down San Antonio's offense. And, I mean, last night they resorted to, you know, basically doing the hack-a-shack, you know, on that splinter kid, you know, their backup center who's, you know, like a 60% free throw shooter. And if that's what you have to resort to slow your offense or to slow an opposing team's offense down, then you really need to go back to the drawing board on defense and try to figure out a game plan on how to stop Tony Parker, because right now he is just owning Russell Westbrook. And, you know, I think the Thunder, once they get home, they'll settle down and really give the Spurs a run for their money. But, Marvin, you know, they had an interesting stat last night, and this is just kind of hard for me to even fathom. The Spurs have not lost a game in almost 50 calendar days. I mean, is that not unreal?
Man, that's unheard of, especially in pro sports of any kind. But you said it perfect. I mean, the only thing I've gotten out of this series so far is knowing that Tony Parker can't be stopped by Westbrook. So they have to develop something to be able to slow him down from being able to do what he wants to do with the basketball. And OKC, even though they're a great home team, Chris, they better be careful because San Antonio is a veteran team. And if anybody can come in and steal game three from you, it's San Antonio. Popovich, the coach, these guys are veterans and they play together. So OKC better not relax because they're back at home. This is a must two game. They have to win these two games or this series is over. But I am expecting them to win. I'm expecting them to steal a game in San Antonio if they can win those next two to kind of change the momentum around. So it's going to take a huge swing in momentum. This could easily be a sweep, Chris.
Exactly, and that's what I was sitting here thinking. You know, if you're OKC, you know, you definitely wanted to at least split these first two games. You know, you wanted to at least win one of these games on the road because now going back home, you're down 0-2. You have all the pressure in the world to win game three because if you lose game three, the series is over. I mean, you're not beating San Antonio four straight times. So, I mean, Oklahoma City has all the pressure on them right now. And so we'll find out what kind of team they really are. So I'm expecting the Thunder to come out big in game three, maybe to try to make some type of statement to the Spurs that, hey, we can compete with you guys and we can win this series. So I'm really excited about game three.
Well, you know, if you're not going to beat a team four times in a row if they haven't lost one time in 50 days. It's going to be hard for them to find
exactly
a way to lose four games in a week. So, yeah, OKC, this is huge. You're right. They needed to split that series. They needed to split games one or two, but they didn't. And now, I mean, even game four is pressure. You can't even think about game four yet until all the pressure on game three collapses on you. And then all of a sudden, if you win game three, then all the pressure is back on you because if you lose game four, all of a sudden you're down 3-1, and guess what? You're back on the plane to San Antonio, and you know you're not going to make it out alive. So I think if they can win these next two in OKC, I just have a little sneaky feeling, Chris, that they're going to sneak in there and get game five in San Antonio and win this series. But it's going to take them to win one road game. That's all it takes. They can win both of their home games here first and sneak that one in. This could be a six-game series. This series is just too hard to predict because of all the different variables in it. But one thing I do know, OKC better learn how to guard Tony Parker or find something to slow him down because, you know, the big three of OKC last night, they had great numbers and they outshot San Antonio and everything. But if you look at the whole collective unit of San Antonio, they just outplayed OKC.
Yeah, that's a great point because last night, you're right, you know, Oklahoma City, their big three, you know, Durant and Westbrook and Harden coming off the bench all had huge games, but it just seemed like they got nothing from Ibaka and Kendrick Perkins. So they're definitely going to have to – their bench is definitely going to have to contribute more because San Antonio's bench right now is playing lights out, you know. I mean, it just seems like every guy that they put on the floor is making shots, you know, and that – I think, you know – that was one of the key factors in this series was whose bench was going to play well. And right now, San Antonio is definitely outplaying the Thunder. So what about the Heat-Celtics series? We've got the game two tonight. The game's in Miami. Just tipped off. I think they're about midway through the first quarter. What are you seeing in that series that you like?
I figured game one, Miami would win that game just because of the rest they had, and Celtics didn't have much of a rest. But, again, it all goes with Ray Allen. He didn't play well the other night. They lost tonight. I think they're up six at the end of the first quarter. I think Celtics are going to win this game, and I think they can win this series as long as they don't give Miami too many second chances. And Boston's not in a position to turn the ball over and give Miami and let them run. You know, they need to slow the game down a little bit and work inside on Miami. But, you know, in the first game, they were trying to force a lot. Miami was getting some fast break opportunities. So I look for the Celtics to make this series a great series. If they can win tonight and split on the road, you know, Chris, all of a sudden you're going two in Boston. It's going to put a lot of pressure on Miami.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, that's a great point because it seemed like the Heat in game one, they were just – seemed like they were getting easy transition buckets, and that's going to be the key for Boston is they're going to have to figure out a way to, I guess, limit those opportunities for the Heat and keep them out of transition and somehow turn them into a jump shooting team. The question that I really have of Boston is really how much do they have left in the tank? You know, game one, they're coming off that, game seven that they had, and, you know, they only had one day's rest. So you could tell that they were kind of tired in game one, and they've had that extra day to kind of heal up and get the fresh legs up under them. And seems like tonight they're coming out with a little bit more fire. But, yeah, if they can split this, if they can split these first two games on the road, then, yeah, you're exactly right. All of a sudden, you know, the Heat, they have a little bit of pressure on them going back to Boston. And, you know, once you get the Celtics in the Garden, it's definitely a different story, you know, as far as what you're able to get and the calls that you're going to get. You're going to get all those calls at home. So, and to me, that was a big thing with the number of, like, technical fouls in that first game. I mean, it seemed like Boston, every time they turned around, they were getting a technical foul in the game. So
that was getting ridiculous, man. That was ridiculous seeing that. I mean, come on, this is a playoff. This is not the first week of the season here. You know, calling technical foul on one guy was, I think he touched the ball after he scored and they teed him up. So, I mean, it's just, it was getting ridiculous, but that's called home cooking. But, Chris, one thing about Boston, and tell me if I'm wrong about this, anytime they're up against the wall, you back them into the wall, they come out swinging. They did it against Atlanta. They were down 1-0, got Rondo suspended. Game two, they're about to go down 0-2. They play the game of their life, and they win that series. Philadelphia beat them in game two, and they're coming back to Philadelphia in a big game three. Boston blows them out. So it just looks like to me that anytime Boston needs to pick up the pace and play, those veterans pick it up and they win. So I really do expect tonight the Boston to win this game, and let's head back to Boston and just see what happens.
Yeah, and I think that all stems from their head coach, Doc Rivers. I mean, I'm a huge Doc Rivers fan. I think he's an excellent coach. And, you know, I kind of chuckled a little bit after his post-game conference there. You know, they were talking about basically the athleticism of LeBron James and Dwayne Wade, and he's like, yeah, he's like, they're pretty unbelievable, you know, and he's like, you just have to see it in person to believe it to believe how good they are. And I think that was done, you know, just for a little bit of motivational factor for his team. You know, here he is bragging on how great LeBron and Dwayne Wade is, and I think that was just used as a little subtle message to his team to get them fired up and give them a little bit extra motivation to come out and improve, you know, prove a point in game two. And it looks like they're doing that. So
I have to give the edge to Rivers instead of Ponch for Miami there. I think Rivers is a lot better coach, and I feel like I'm watching the show Chips when I watch Miami play. You remember that show, Chris?
Yeah, exactly. He looks like a little 12-year-old kid out there coaching sometimes.
Yeah, he has no business being out there as a coach in the NBA. He's just Pat Riley, you know what, is what he is. And, you know, all it takes, if they lose their series, he's gone too. So the Celtics are up 28-18, controlling the tempo of this game, and they're playing great defense right now, making Miami earn those points and making them struggle, like trying to get the ball in the hole. And that's something, like you said, Chris, they didn't do in game one. They're just giving up the easy baskets, which on the road, you know, that's a recipe for disaster when you're playing a team like Miami that can just fill it up. They get on a roll, they're just going to fast break you to death, and you don't have the legs to be able to keep up with them. But here's the deal, Chris, Miami's the big two. You know, they don't even have a big three anymore. So Boston has a good team. They're a little older. They're not as athletic as Wade and LeBron, but San Antonio goes and showed you last night. You don't have to have the best players on the court to win. You just have to have the best team. So
exactly.
I'm not giving up on Boston just yet.
No, I definitely wouldn't either because, I mean, let's face it, if you're the Heat, I mean, how much can you really count on Mike Miller and Mario Chalmers and their bench to really produce for you when all year long they've done nothing but really disappoint. I mean, if I'm Boston, I'm feeling good. If I can get a split here, you know, I think they'll have all the momentum in the world. And I, you know, I originally picked the Heat, you know, to win this series in six, but kind of the more that I'm looking at it, you know, I mean, they'll be lucky to even win this series. And if they do win it, it'll definitely go seven games.
Well, Chris, we're going to be following this series on. So Sunday, we'll have a good breakdown of both of these series going on, and we should have a lot better picture of who's going to win. And I think you're right, Boston, it'll be a gift. They'll feel great about this series if they can split on the road, because Miami, they don't lose at home. So
exactly.
You can beat them there. You know, you just flip home court advantage back in your favor. So we will be following in on this. 30-18 right now, the Celtics are up. Throughout the show, if anything changes, really, we'll update you on it. But we want to shift gears a little bit. But first, hold on, before we shift gears, I want to stay in the NBA on the lottery. The lottery was tonight for the NBA, and Michael Jordan was the best basketball player in history, but, boy, he's the worst owner in history. And tonight, you know, he snaked it again. He can't even get the first pick in the draft. So, I mean, he had all the balls stacked in his favor, and he still loses.
Yeah. And, you know, I feel bad because I think I made a joke maybe it was about a month ago when we were talking about basically how bad he's been as a GM. And I said, you know, Michael Jordan, he's so bad, you know, he's so bad as a general manager, and the Bobcats are so bad that they're probably going to lose the lottery. And I'll be danged if they didn't lose the lottery tonight. So, you know, it just goes to show you that the Bobcats, they just can't win for losing. So I believe the New Orleans Hornets, they got the number one pick.
Yeah, and you know who they're taking, don't you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and you know what? I bet Anthony Davis is probably the happiest man in America right now. Knowing that
he is. He was smiling from ear to ear, Chris. And he said, you know what? I just won the NCAA championship in New Orleans, so he said, I'll be glad to go back.
Yeah, exactly.
Look, I'm going to tell you this, Chris, and all the listeners out there, call in 646-716-5564. Look, Anthony Davis is going to the Hornets, guys. There's no doubt. You can bet a million on it. It's coming through. If one player in this draft can really change the complexion of a team and get them to the playoffs, it's this kid. And trust me, he's got a lot of development left to do in his offensive game, but this guy can play defense, and that's where it all starts in the NBA, man. If you can play, you got a big man down low that can block and play and rebound. You got a big player and a better chance to win. Because right now the Bobcats have nothing.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, Anthony Davis, he's going to come in and contribute immediately. You know, as far as defensively. You know, the offense, like you said, the offensive game will come over time. And I think the kid still has some growing to do. I mean, maybe not in length, but he's definitely going to fill out that frame. And once he develops that offensive game, I mean, he's definitely going to be a highly productive center in this league. I mean, I don't know that I would put him in that Dwight Howard-type category, but I definitely think he could be one of the top three centers within the next, you know, 3 to 4 years, just depending on how quickly that offensive game develops. So, you know, I'm sure the New Orleans Hornets are extremely pleased. You know, they basically know who their guy's going to be. And, you know, hey, like they say, sometimes you'd rather be lucky than good. And they got lucky in this situation and winning the lottery.
Yeah, I think they were so desperate to get it. Sometimes when you're desperate for something, it just doesn't happen. And I think Jordan, he was already counting his chickens before they hatched, so to speak. And you know, now they're screwed. I mean, sure, there's going to be somebody good in there to get, but not like an Anthony Davis. And also, the Hornets get the number 10 pick also, so they get two first-rounders. And you know, looking at the star power in this draft, man, they could turn their season around, their team around, and just one round of drafting, man. Just one round, it can change it all in basketball.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they'll definitely go with Anthony Davis the first pick, and, you know, they'll probably, if I had to guess, try to trying to upgrade at the guard position, and so that'll be huge for the Hornets. Let me ask you this: so if you're Charlotte, who do you think they'll take with the number 2 overall pick? Do you think Jordan has the audacity to draft a Harrison Barnes out of North Carolina,
no,
his alma mater?
No, I think he's going with Gilchrist. If you look at this kid's play, you can't pass him up either. And I told you this during the tournament, they're the two best players on that team. And how can you pass up on Gilchrist? I mean, this kid's amazing.
Yeah, I agree. I thought I'd bring up that old North Carolina connection just to maybe burn some
sugar
there. But
that's a good one. And we're going to change gears, and we're going to the college football game. Call in number 646-716-5564. We're going to talk about Alabama in just a few minutes, not too much longer, guys. So if you're out there and you're wanting to listen, just hold on. We're going to still talk some college football. Hey, there's a playoff going out. You know, they're discussing the playoff for college football. We had a +1 format they were talking about. Then they were talking about the best 4 teams. And then now, you know, all the commissioners of each conference, Chris, are wanting the 4 teams in this playoff to be conference champions. And it just made me laugh when I read that, because I think you talked about it when we were on this show that's what they're going to do, because they couldn't stand the SEC to have 2 teams, you know, in it. And this way it guarantees it knocks one of the SEC teams out, and you'll never see that happen again, what just happened. But all the fans out there, and you, Chris, I have a question for you. Is this decision by the commissioners just because of that reason of the SEC?
It is exactly the reason. And it's exactly the reason why we really even, you know, we've been talking about having a playoff for some years now, and when it was announced that LSU and Alabama were going to play in the national title game, you know, back in December, I knew that there would start. This would be the perfect opportunity to introduce a playoff, you know, in college football, because when you think about the amount of money that's associated with playing in that BCS title game, and all of that money basically going to one conference, all these commissioners, I mean, it just ate them alive. And so when I heard the talk about, you know, hey, we're thinking about going to a playoff here, you know, we had kind of given our opinions on, hey, what's the right format? You know, should it be conference champions? Should it be, you know, the best 4 teams? I knew these commissioners from other leagues would get together and try to force this, you know, this exact scenario, because they do not want what happened last January to ever happen again. They do not want to see 2 teams from the same conference play for the national title. They just don't want to see that happen, and they're going to do everything in their power to make sure that doesn't happen. So. I think,
Chris,
you're exactly right. This is the reason why.
Well, Chris, you know, I talked about only having a +1 and 4 teams at the most, you know, but still wouldn't devalue the regular season. So if you only have conference champions playing in this, all you do is devalue the regular season, really, because,
exactly.
I mean, think about it. I mean, SEC team could easily have 2 losses and get to it, but there could be a 2-loss team that's deserving. Or even, I'm not just talking SEC, I'm talking Pac-12. And I don't care if it's 3 Pac-12 teams in it and 1 Big 12 team. As long as it's the 4 best teams in the country, I could care less who it is. I'm not just saying this because I'm an SEC person, but it's the only ones that want it is the SEC right now. And if you can't blame the other commissioners out there, because they just want their team in it as well. So it's all about the dollar bill and the recognition. But the number one driver of this is the jealousy of the SEC, and they don't want to see it. And like you said, as soon as that was announced, LSU-Alabama matchup, you knew it, I knew it. Anybody that had any football IQ knew it last year, that those two were the best teams in the country. Now, you had people argue, well, Alabama doesn't deserve to go because they didn't win their division. Well, that's probably true, but it was nowhere in the rules to say that. So that's the problem with the BCS. But at the end of the day, the BCS got it right. And they do get it right sometimes. This year was one of them. Oklahoma State good team. You know, they could have played in it. You could have had Stanford. I mean, but here's the deal. Do you really want to see, like, the Big Ten champion, Big 12 champion, Pac-12 and SEC play? You're going to get the same result. The only thing it does is eliminates one of these wild card teams. So if you have, Chris, for instance, Alabama won the SEC, you know, undefeated. You have Stanford winning, or Oregon winning the Pac-12. You have, let's say, West Virginia winning the Big 12 this year. And, say, Ohio State wins the Big 10. And, say, all of them have two losses except Alabama. But then you have a 11-1 LSU team out there. So are you telling me that the best four teams are playing if you did it that way? No.
Exactly. Yeah.
I agree. That's the thing. I just don't understand, Chris, why the people don't want to see the four best teams. That's what I can't get.
Well, I think if you polled all the college football fans, they would give you that answer. They would say, I want to see the four best teams no matter what the conference. But, you know, Brian, at the end of the day, this thing all boils down to money for these different conferences. And so that's what the commissioners from, you know, the Pac-12 and the Big Ten and the Big 12 are looking at. They want a piece of that pie, and they want to make sure that they get a piece of that pie, and they're going to do everything within their power to get it. Now, the interesting thing I see going on is if they decide to go to four teams in a playoff format and those four teams have to be conference champions, I think what's going to happen, you're going to see a move by all of these four major conferences to expand. And basically, you're going to have four super conferences in college football, and the rest of the conferences are just going to kind of be left out. They're going to kind of be the, I guess, Division One Double A almost equivalent. So you'll see more expansion if it goes this route, which I hope it does, and I hope they're smart enough just to take the four best teams and be done with it that way. So that's another kind of interesting viewpoint that I have on it. So we'll see, you know, I guess as they announce what this format is actually going to be. But I'm with you, Brian. I mean, I think they're getting it halfway right, but they definitely need to take the four best teams and let it be at that.
All right, we're going to go to the phone lines right now. We have area code 541. You're on Way In Sports. Is this Colin?
Yes, sir.
How's it going, sir?
Not too bad. How you guys doing over there?
We're doing great.
Glad you could call in. And what's on your mind tonight?
Well, not a whole lot. I was just caught the tail end of what you guys were saying about the conference championship thing and the title game selection. I don't know where you landed on that, but I heard the top four teams should be picked and not conference championships deciding the teams. And, yeah, I definitely would rather see the top four teams.
Yeah, even if it's, you know, and like we're SEC down here, but you know what, if Oregon, USC, and Oklahoma were the three teams, put them in there. I want to see the best games possible. And I think college football fans, if you're a true fan, you just want to see the best. I know we all brag about our conferences, picking at each other, but at the end of the day, we just want to see, you know, the best teams. And, Colin, how's the Oregon Ducks looking this year?
Oh, not too bad. They got some question marks. Lose a couple guys on the offensive line. Of course, lose LaMichael James, Darren Thomas, big names. But they got a couple guys and a lot of experience coming back. So it could be a whole lot worse.
Yeah, I picked Oregon last year to win the national championship preseason, and I really did think they would get LSU last year. Chris, you remember I said that. I just had a feeling that it was Oregon's year. You know, they were probably one game away from playing for it. They would have beaten USC last year. They would have probably been in the national championship game ahead of Alabama. But how do you see with a quarterback gone now, with Thomas gone? Who's your backup that's going to be starting, actually?
Well, there's Brian Bennett, who got a couple starts last season and played in quite a few of the end games on cleanup. And then also Marcus Mariota, the red shirt freshman, played in the spring game and did real good. He threw two interceptions but also had couple touchdowns, and 130-something rushing yards. And he looked pretty good, real confident kid, looks to make good decisions. So
well,
I'm going to put Mariota at this point.
You know, when y'all lost Masoli, everybody thought, you know, a few years ago, well, Oregon's done, and they just put another athletic quarterback in, and it just goes better and better. So Chip Kelly has it rolling in Oregon right now.
Yeah, he's real good at developing quarterbacks. Dixon was the first quarterback he coached up in 2007 when Chip Kelly was still the offensive coordinator. And he wasn't much of a runner. Out of high school, he was just a passing quarterback and really grew into it in college. So I'm hoping Chip Kelly can do the same with the next guy.
You know, Oregon's been close with, you know, you spoke of Dixon. If he hadn't, I think he broke his leg or something or hurt his knee.
Yeah,
they would have won they would have played for the national championship that year, I'm sure. Just not
watching
the
play. He only played 7 or 8 games, I think, and still got 5th in the Heisman voting at the end of the year. So he was definitely a special kind of player.
Yeah, and I believe they were undefeated when he went out. I mean, Over a season, you can develop them, right, Colin? But over a week, it's kind of hard to.
Yeah, everybody had gotten to a groove with Dixon, and then when he went down, they lost 3 of the last 4. Then, if I remember right, ended up playing. God, who was it? Might have been Oklahoma State in the Holiday Bowl, I think.
I think he beat them too, didn't he?
Yeah, that was Masoli's, I think, 2nd real game as a starter. Somebody came in after Dixon. I don't remember who he was. He only played a game or two, though. Masoli started against Oklahoma State and ended up beating them by a touchdown, I believe. But, yeah, Chicago's got a pretty good record of developing quarterbacks.
Chris, what do you think about the Ducks this year? What are you seeing? I'm seeing a very high finish out of them this year.
Yeah, I mean, it's all going to depend on, you know, what kind of play they get out of the quarterback position. And, two, I'm really excited about the running back, too, Kenyon Barner, seeing how he's going to be able to step up and replace LaMichael James. I know, you know, when LaMichael missed some games, I believe, last year, you know, when he came in, he was highly productive. And that kid's very explosive. So I'm really looking forward to the Ducks this year, you know. When we got to go out to the national championship game, we got to talk to a lot of Duck fans, and you know, they're good people. You know, they're very passionate about their program, which I love. You know, me being a Auburn Tiger fan, you know, we're passionate about our team. So I love being around fan bases that are just as passionate as we are about our program. So, but I'm really looking forward to the Oregon-USC game this year. I think that's going to be just a spectacular game to see how Oregon, you know, fares against that USC defensive line. So that'll be a true test for the Ducks this year.
Yeah, that game got me a little bit worried.
Well, you know, I think Oregon, you know, the speed and everything, you just never know about Oregon. They gave that game away last year. I thought they should have beaten USC this past year, but they didn't. Yeah, they didn't. I mean, they got too far behind early, and they just ran out of gas at the end. And usually when that happens, that turnover or something at the end of the game, a penalty, I believe it was a penalty that hurt Oregon at the end of the game. I'm looking forward to that game too, man. Do you think USC is going to be loaded this year like everybody else?
They got a good team coming back. I got to say Matt Barkley and those wide receivers are going to be hard to stop for just about anybody. I believe they got probably 2 of the top 5 receivers in the country on that team and one of the best quarterbacks throwing to them. Their offensive line, they're going to miss Matt Khalil a lot, I think. They got quite a bit of talent coming back, so they should have a pretty decent team this year.
You know, one thing, I don't care how much talent they have. If I see Lane Kiffin on the sidelines, I can go ahead and tell you there's 2 losses coming up. So that's one good thing if you're an Oregon Ducks
fan. Yeah. Just got to hope one of them comes against us.
Exactly. Even if they did beat you, if they lose 2, I don't see you losing anybody else on your schedule. I think you got it.
I see Oregon and USC each probably taking one of the games they win this year. I think they're going to both end up in the conference championship game. When I think one's going to win the regular season game and one's going to win the championship game. So I'm just hoping Oregon wins the right one.
And that's a great point. Even if Oregon did lose, you know, they still get another crack at them probably. So that's a great point. So the winner is probably going to be probably in the national championship game.
Yeah, I've been saying all along I would have loved to see Oregon and LSU in the rematch last year, but Oregon didn't deserve it at that point. But even USC and Alabama, I think, would make a great matchup, and Oregon and or USC against LSU would be real fun to watch.
Yeah,
I always like seeing these. Yeah, I always like these high-scoring, fast-paced offenses going up against those big defenses down there. It makes an interesting game.
Well, I was scared going into the Auburn-Oregon game a couple of years ago because I did know, you know, about the speed of Oregon, and they are more physical than people think as well. They're not just small and fast. They are very, I mean, they're physical, and Chip Kelly just runs people into the ground. And that's one thing that went through my mind, you know, when y'all played us is the defense. Our defense was not very good. And we had a good defensive line, but that was about it. But thank God for Nick Fairley that game, or we would have been dead.
Yeah, Nick Fairley was kind of a savior there.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah. I was really impressed, too, you know, watching the game live. You know, I thought with our offense, you know, going into that game that we would be able to pretty much do whatever we wanted to do. But I was surprised, you know, at how well and how disciplined Oregon's defense was. I mean, they were always in the right spot making the plays. And, you know, Casey Matthews makes a huge play there toward the end of the game, you know, basically stripping the ball from Cam Newton. And at that point, I thought, man, we might be in trouble here, you know. And that's the one thing that, you know, I always kind of viewed Oregon as kind of soft on the defensive side of the ball. But after watching that game live and watching their scheme, I mean, Oregon has got some athletes, and they got some guys that can hit. And I was very impressed with Oregon's overall, you know, defensive scheme and their game plan. And so hopefully, you know, going forward, you know, Chip Kelly can develop that defense to take it to the next level. And I think that's what Oregon's missing to really truly compete for a national title. If they can somehow bolster that defense a little bit, just, you know, get some extra playmakers in there, they're going to be tough to handle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree.
You go ahead, sir. I'm sorry. I cut out.
Oh, yeah, my biggest complaint with the national title game is I kind of felt like Chip Kelly stuck with the run too much. The passing game was hot that day, but he just insisted on running the ball down, and your defensive line was shutting down the Oregon running backs all over the place.
Yeah. Well, but, you know, from a coaching perspective, you kind of hate to go away with, you know, what got you there. And, I mean, let's face it, LaMichael James that year, I mean, he was absolutely phenomenal. And, you know, I can understand from a coaching perspective, you know, you don't really want to venture too far out of your comfort zone. But yeah, you're right. They probably did stick with the run a little bit too much. You know, they got some huge plays in the passing game. And really that, if you were going to beat Auburn that year, that's how you did it. I mean, because that was our weak point was the secondary. So, you know, you learn from those mistakes and those coaching mistakes that you make. So hopefully he'll learn. And I'd love to see Oregon beat USC because I'm with Harvin. I can't stand Lane Kiffin. And I hope USC gets put on probation for the next 20 years because he's just nothing but a snake in the grass.
Yeah. Well, I got to know, what was going on with Cam Newton in the title game? Was he hurt? He seemed a little bit off that day.
He did get hurt in the third quarter. Somebody came down on him as he went down. Someone came down on his back. He tweaked his back, and even after the game, he was in the hospital getting X-rays. He just tweaked his back, and he was in a lot of pain. But it was only in the second half, I believe. Chris, do you know anything different?
I remember a certain play in the first half. I think it was. He just seemed kind of off target. Throwing a touchdown pass to, I think it was Lutzenkirk, and that the ball just hit the ground right before it hit him and just seemed like uncharacteristic of him.
Yeah, and it was probably nerves of being in that that stage, and, you know, Auburn's only been there one time, and it was in 57. So I think it was a lot going on, and Oregon had a lot to do with that too, you know, keeping him out of his rhythm, staying disciplined, and hitting him. They hit him a lot that night, didn't they, Chris?
Oh, yeah. Same thing I heard too. You know, he tweaked his back, and basically, you know, going back and watching the replay on DVR and stuff. I mean, you could definitely tell that he wasn't 100%, and that he was basically just trying to arm his throws, because, you know, he really couldn't get a lot on his throw because of his back, but. Let me ask you this: what are your expectations for the Ducks this year? I mean, do you think they have enough to compete for a national title this year?
I don't know. It depends on how whoever they pick as the quarterback progresses, and I'm a little bit worried about the offensive line. They lost a couple guys that had a lot of career starts that did some good things for them. They got some talent returning, so that's good, but there's a couple question marks, and the secondary has got me real worried. They got some good corners, but they're short, scrawny little guys. I mean, they're always with the ball, but it's hard to cover those tall receivers with them.
Yeah,
that was the problem with that.
Kind of like USC, right? USC has those big tall receivers. It's hard to get.
Yeah, that was a problem last year. Woods and Marquise Lee could just jump over our corners and catch them all day long.
Yeah. Well, you know what? We're going to be following the Ducks a lot this year, so I appreciate your call. Make sure you call back in and share with us, talk about the Ducks or anything regarding any sport.
Yeah, I got one more question, though, for you guys.
Okay.
So what do you think about Kyle Frazier for this term? Or not term, season.
Chris, go ahead.
Well, there's a lot of unknowns with Kyle Frazier, and I really haven't seen enough of him in person to really give a good evaluation. Now, the reports that I'm hearing out of spring practice is that he looks a lot more comfortable in the new offensive system, and it seems like he's developed a little bit more, or he's making the throws that he needs to make. I mean, all indications that he's going to be the starter coming into next season. You know, the big knock on Kyle when he first got to Auburn was that he didn't know the playbook, and, you know, he wasn't able to, I guess, make all the right reads. And maybe that was a product of Malzahn's offense. But, you know, I think eventually he's going to get there. To me, the big test is going to be for him this year. I mean, obviously, he's going to be a first-year starter, so it's just going to be kind of, just touch and feel as we go, you know, as to how effective he's going to be. But I'm expecting him to come in to contribute, and because they're going to have a solid run game. The offensive line is going to be a lot better, and that's going to be the key, really, to his success, is how well that young offensive line plays.
Yeah, something like Oregon's situation.
Yeah, Colin, I've been studying Kyle Frazier for a few years, actually, and listening to Auburn's old offensive coordinator, Gus Malzahn, talk. You know, he's the best thing since sliced bread. When I watched him last year, and a lot of Auburn people thought he was going to be Cam Newton again. You know, Cam left, and here comes Kyle Frazier. But the problem is, you put a true freshman up against defenses in college, it's just very difficult on him to start picking up that speed. High school and college is different, you know as well as I do. And but I'm hearing good things about Kyle Frazier, that he's going to surprise a lot of people, that his accuracy looks very good in practice. And I know it's practice, so that's all I can tell you is it's practice. But he looks a lot better, more comfortable. He fits more into the offensive system of Loeffler than Malzahn. I think he just picks it up better for some reason. But I'm expecting, from what I'm hearing, and just a gut feeling, I think Kyle Frazier is going to be a very good quarterback this year. But we'll just have to see. I'm hoping he is, at least.
Yeah. All right. I actually got two more quick things. Sorry. Robert Condici, I'm sure you guys have heard of him. Top 2013 recruit, defensive end. You guys got any opinions on where he's going to end up?
What was the name again?
Robert Condici.
did you? And he's picking between, who is it, Alabama, USC, Oregon?
It looks like Alabama or LSU and Ole Miss.
Okay, I'm on the wrong one. Well, I don't know. I'm not very familiar with him, honestly. Chris, are you?
Now, if I had to guess, if he's a top-rated defensive prospect, he's probably going to go to Alabama, if I had to guess. You know, but Nick Saban, that is where he puts his emphasis on recruiting, is on the defensive side of the ball. And they just flock to Tuscaloosa because we got some breakup here. Oh, they just flock to Tuscaloosa because, I mean, he produces the talent to go to the next level. So if I had to put me on it, I definitely think he'd probably be going to Alabama.
Yeah. And what are your guys' thoughts on Arkansas next season? Is the off-season trouble going to hurt them, or you think they'll be all right?
Well, I think it was going to hurt them in a way until John L. Smith came, and I think he's the right coach for a short-term solution to kind of rally the troops. I think Arkansas, they lost a lot on defense. I'm just going to ignore right now the Bobby Petrino garbage, but they lost a lot on defense, and I just don't think Arkansas is going to be there. They have probably the best quarterback, one of them in the country, probably a top five quarterback in the country, and they lost a lot of receivers. They're big-time receivers, but it's hard when you have Bobby Petrino, the mastermind, calling plays. It is going to be a huge drop-off to not have him. I have to admit that. Chris, what do you think about Arkansas?
Yeah, I think Arkansas, all the off-season turmoil that went down in Fayetteville is definitely going to have an effect on their performance this year. I mean, you know, like Tarvin said, they lost their top three receivers, and people don't realize how good those receivers were. I mean, they created a lot of mismatches. Now, they do have Tyler Wilson coming back, and I agree with Tarvin. He's definitely he's definitely one of the top quarterbacks in the SEC and the country. But I just don't know that that's going to be enough to get them, you know, if Petrino returns, you know, if that whole mess doesn't go down, I think they have a real legitimate shot at competing for a national title this year. But like Brian said, with the mastermind, with him being gone, and the team having to basically rally around the new coach, John L. Smith. I do like what he's doing, like Tarvin said, coming in, installing some discipline. He's already kicked a bunch of players off the team and suspended some of the bad apples there. So he's definitely the right guy for this cleanup job. But I just don't see Arkansas competing for the SEC West, especially when you're talking about having to face LSU and Alabama. So I see them taking a small step back, and we'll see going forward, you know, who they get to replace, you know, John L. Smith, or, you know, if he's going to be their long-term solution or if they're going to bring in somebody else. So Arkansas this year, I definitely think they take a step back.
Yeah, I do too.
I appreciate you calling in,
man. Okay,
yeah,
man.
No problem.
I appreciate
anytime.
You calling in. And okay, talk to you later, man.
All right, have a good night. All right, take it easy.
All right, you're all in sports. Who's this?
This is Marty Robinson.
Marty Robinson, how's it going,
Marty?
Sir?
It's going good. If I can get over this root canal I had today, it's getting a little better.
You know, Chris, how do you get Marty to talk? Is talk about Alabama football. That's how you get Marty to talk.
Oh, ears perked up.
Yeah, I mean, you know, calling in with the root canal just hours ago, I mean, you have to be pretty passionate about your team.
Marty, you know what call that? That's dedication.
Well, I guess I've been that way since I've been about 5 years old, when I went to five or six when I went to my first Alabama game, and I've been that way ever since.
Well, Marty, you called in at the perfect time because we're about to, you know, break down Alabama, and if anybody knows them, it's you. So you want to stay on with us as we break down the Tide?
Sure, it'd be great.
Well, you know, looking at Alabama, Chris and Marty, you know, I think they lost a pretty good bit on defense, but, you know, when you recruit top five classes. Actually, I'll just say top three classes. When you do top three classes for year after year, you're going to have talent and you're going to be loaded. So, you know, looking at Alabama's defense, guys, they lost a lot of players. And then a 3-4 defense, you know, it all starts with your nose tackle. And then as your linebackers, they lost three linebackers, I believe, and their nose tackle. But, Marty, what do you think is going to happen with the defense? That's a lot to lose. And, you know, even though you're talented, it's still a lot to lose.
That's true. They did lose a lot of good players, but the great thing about it is the backup players are. I don't really even call them backup players in Saban's defense. They're just relief players, really, because you know at nose tackle, losing Chapman was a huge man to lose in the middle, but you know Jesse Williams is going to step right in. You know, just as big as Chapman is. Maybe not as strong, but maybe a little faster than Chapman is as far as maybe rushing the passer a little better. Of course, that's a run-stop position. But then you got Brandon Ivory, which is right behind him. He got playing time last year. And Wilson Love, which is a redshirt freshman. And William Ming, which is a sophomore. I mean, you got those four guys that can rotate this year at nose tackle. So like you said, this is where the recruiting for the last few years is paying off in depth. You know, these guys are just itching to get in there to get their chance. And that's, to me, I'm not a coach, but I can understand it could be a fine, delicate balance of how you approach all these good players to keep them motivated, you know, that you're going to get your time, you know. And so it's a good thing to have. And I don't think there'll be a drop-off in talent on defense. I really don't. Now, what may happen, we just hope don't happens like the 2010 season where, you know, you just come off a national championship, everybody's feeling like they're the best and they don't have to work as hard. I mean, it's just hard to repeat or, you know, to stay motivated, I imagine, after doing that. That's what concerns me more than the talent that they lost. Is how are these guys going to gel? Then you have to open up with Michigan right off the bat. You know, no time to see. You know, you're not starting off with a little bit of no-name team that you can just do some fine-tuning on. You got to start right off with Michigan. And that kind of concerns me a little bit.
Yeah, I look at the schedule, and you know, that's good. You know, when you have a young defense, and I think, like you said, I think people forget. Well, I mean, they misinterpret talent and experience. Alabama's defense this year will probably be more talented than last year's, but it's experience is what counts, you know, sometimes when he's talking about championships. Because one thing about Alabama I noticed, Marty and Chris, you tell me if I'm wrong, is like on defense, they could audible so good, and it comes with years of experience, and they would change the plays up. If you watched Arkansas, they just tore Tyler Wilson to pieces because they could audible, and this guy didn't have a chance. And this year, Marty, what do you think about the leadership being able to audible? You have three new linebackers coming in, and maybe they're brand new, but they're not starters. So how do you think that's going to hurt them?
Well, you know, it's kind of an unknown. It really is. But what I've been hearing that's coming off the Crimson Caravan that's going around the country with Saban, people have said that this team – leadership-wise, is much better than the team they had in 2010, which 2010 was a loaded team. But like you said, the experience and some different things on that team didn't help any. But he said this year they seem to have a lot better leadership on the team. It's an unknown, really is. You just never know till they get to playing. But I think he'll have them motivated. I think Saban does have a system that he sticks to, that he knows that works, and all he has to do is get the players to buy into it and to do their job and not worry about other things, but just to do their job and, you know, and trust him to take care of the rest of the stuff, you know. So, I don't know. We just have to see. It's really an unknown.
Marty and Chris, you know, when I saw Alabama in 2010, they seemed like the defense, some of the players seemed like they were entitled already. You know, they didn't have to do as much because of that championship. And I think Saban will teach them from the experience is, hey, here's exactly a certain same situation. Let's repeat it. You know, 2009, a great defense, great running game. championship. 2010, great team, probably more talented than the 2019. You know, played maybe a little cocky, and all of a sudden you have three losses. That Alabama team was one of the best in the country in 2010. And then last year, you saw what they did. So I don't think Saban will have any problems, Chris. You tell me if I'm wrong motivating this team.
No, I don't think he will either. And I think the big difference, you know, from the transition from the 2009 to the 2010, and then I guess from the 2011 to this team, you know, pretty much the team from 10 was pretty much the same players from 09. It seems like this year they've lost a lot more of the key components, and I think that'll be key for Saban to get in their ear and not let them be so cocky because they've got so many new faces. So he's going to kind of approach this season as, hey, you know, you younger guys, you got to step up. You've got something to prove, you know. And the one thing about Nick Saban is, and the thing that I really admire about him is his teams are always prepared, and that's what will help them this year. That's what will help them, those young players, is the preparation and the game planning. So that will help kind of ease them into the starting role, that ability to prepare for games. And Marty, I know you might be kind of concerned about the Michigan game, but I can tell you from an Auburn perspective, if you give Nick Saban a month, and in this case, a whole offseason to prepare for one team, I'm going to take my chances with Nick Saban, and I'm going to say that they're going to beat Michigan pretty handily. So.
Well, you hope so, but like, being the first game is the only thing that concerns me because, you know, if it was the second or third game and then had a chance to at least guys to you know, get a feel for the position playing somebody else besides themselves, then, you know, I'd feel more confident about it, you know. It's just like spring. They look great, but you can't tell a whole lot about spring practice because they're running such vanilla plays and they're not wanting to really get hurt. And I mean, you just really can't tell a whole lot about spring practice. All you can look is the size and the speed of the players, and you try to judge from that point. But you know, it's going to be tough. You know, looking at Alabama's schedule too. You know, you start off with Michigan, you got Western Kentucky, which will be a little break. Then you got to go to Arkansas. You know, then you get a little break with Florida Atlantic. Then you got to go to Ole Miss, which who knows about Ole Miss? You know, but you still have to go there.
Marty,
Ole Miss will be at home. I think Ole Miss will be at home this year.
It is. I look at this schedule, and if you're a young defense, this is a perfect game because I know Michigan's the first one that's tough, but Marty, trust me, Alabama will wax these guys bad. You have Western Kentucky at Arkansas. Arkansas doesn't have the defensive line, and they actually took a step back this year. I think Alabama will grow up a lot in the Arkansas game, and then they'll beat them, and they have Florida Atlantic. Easy win, Ole Miss, terrible, and then a bye week. So you have 6 weeks, you know, right there to grow. You have that bye week where a lot of teams grow a lot. Then you start your schedule, you know, at Missouri, at Tennessee, home against Mississippi State, at LSU, Texas A&M, then Auburn. I mean, that's a tough schedule. So that first five games is very important for Alabama to start out 5-0. And, Marty, do you think they'll do it?
Yeah, I believe they will. I mean, the Michigan game is the only thing that concerns me. Like I said, getting everything put together and everybody communicating with each other. And like you said, mentioned before, the Saban's defense is not a simple defense to run. And that's why you see a lot of players come there and they're so highly talented and people think, oh, they're going to be on the field right away and this and that. And you say, what happened to this five-star guy that come there? I haven't seen him in a couple of years. He just can't catch on. It's just a complicated thing, and Saban don't put up with it. You're not understanding it, and he don't want to play if you don't understand it. So, you know, the first game, it concerns me. It just does. That's the only thing, you know. Of course, you know, LSU concerns me going to LSU. Whether they're going to use that, you know, rear end kicking they got last year in the championship game, or they're going to use that for motivation, or are they just going to. Is it just going to destroy their program? And then nobody knows that. If they use it for motivation, well, they'll be out for blood in that game. I mean, that'll be an interesting game, especially if they're undefeated or something when it comes to that time.
Yeah, that's going to be an amazing game, guys. When LSU, like Clark Marty said, you know, you don't know anything until they get out on the field and the lights come on. you just don't know how a team's going to respond. It could be the exact same players, and they just don't have that same chemistry for some reason. But Marty and Chris, one thing about Alabama, and we'll talk about this, when you return, your entire offensive line, they lost their center, but they're going to put in
Barrett Jones
is going to center, and Quanjo is going to left tackle. And the running backs they have, and McCarron showed what he could do in the title game. I'm looking for the offense to be maybe a little better than last year.
I think the offense will be a lot better. I think there'll be a lot better passing team this year than there was last year. You know, the tight end got most of the passes last year, Smelly and stuff, which did a great job. But I think there'll be more receivers involved this year. You know, Kenny Bell's got a lot more experience, and Andrew White, and you know, you still got the big tight end Michael Williams coming back, the 6'6", 269 tight end. You know, and that Jones, which is Barrett Jones, I think is the brother. Harrison Jones. He looked good in spring. He really did. But again, that was spring. But yeah, I think their offense will be nothing to be concerned about at all. I think they'll play with anybody next year. Offensive line makes all the difference in the world.
It does. And you know, that's what people talk about Georgia being so good this year. Man, they lost their entire offense. They lost both of their tackles and their center, I believe. And it's just hard. I don't care what kind of skill players you have around. If you lose your offensive line, it's very difficult. Auburn's offensive line was young last year and inexperienced, and you saw we couldn't even block Ole Miss almost. So it just goes to show you the experience on the line is where it matters. And Cyrus Quanjo, he got a lot of playing time last year, didn't he?
Well, you know, he had that knee injury. You know, he was out for a while. You know, he had the knee surgery, and you know, he's back and healthy and everything, but, you know, he didn't get the playing time that he really needed to get last year. But, you know, he got some. He got some exposure and stuff like that. But the only thing that concerns me a little bit, too, is at the quarterback position. I think Alabama's a little bit vulnerable at the quarterback position. And injuries in general, you know. You talk about the offensive line, but what if you do lose a couple of offensive line players or – you know, and some stuff like that. There's just so many things that could happen in a SEC season, man. That's a brutal battle that you go against week after week, and you lose a couple of three key players, and, you know, the things change. That concerns me a little bit. Of course, that should concern any team, I guess, out there.
Chris, you know as well as I do, champions you don't see national champions that have a lot of injuries this season, do you?
Exactly, and that's key with any team. You know, you got to make sure you're healthy, especially when you play in the SEC, because you know if you're relying on your backups to come in and start a game, I mean those guys can be exposed real quick, because we all know that, especially on the offensive and defensive line, there's just tons of NFL talent, you know, that resides within these teams in the SEC. So my question to you, Marty, is who do you see as being the go-to guy for A.J. McCarron this year? You know, I know, you know, Bama's had Julio Jones in the past and Marquise Mays. Who do you see stepping up at that receiver position to be that legitimate down-the-field threat that can kind of open up some holes for the running game and I guess the tight ends as well?
As far as experience-wise, I'd have to go with Kenny Bell and White. If White can stay out of Saban's doghouse long enough to stay on the field, that's a question right there. But he's a very talented player, very fast. I think he'll be a go-to guy. You know, again, at the tight end position, I think he'll still have Michael Williams there to, you know, for a check off that he can – throw to at any time, but I think the go-to guy is going to be Kenny Bell or White. You know, there's a lot of Norwood, you know, which had a great game against LSU in the title game and stuff. Another good player, but, you know, I think they was building up White so much till he just got in trouble. And then you got the freshman coming in, or the freshman that's there, that Cooper we've heard a lot about, and Chris Black. Those two guys are phenomenal players. They're young. And Christian Jones has really surprised me, you know, running kickoffs back and how comfortable he looked back there for a freshman last year. So, you know, you got a couple of those guys that, you know, really could develop. But experience-wise, I'd have to go with Kenny Bell and White.
Hey, Marty, tell me about the new offensive coordinator that came from Washington, Nussmeier. What's his philosophy really this year? Do you think, I know you said they're going to be better at passing. Do you think they're just going to throw a lot more, or do you think it's going to be balanced as it was last year?
You know, you don't know a whole lot about him if, you know, if you're not around him, but, you know, what I read and what I hear, and my rumors is he's a really a hands-on quarterback type coach. And I think he's going to really help A.J. McCarron out this year with the passing game. And I think he is a little bit more pass happy than the McElwain was. But, you know, again, how much is Saban going to let him do, you know? that's always the Alabama fans talking with each other is, you know, Saban runs the program. And is he going to let him, you know, go downfield a lot? Is he going to let him take chances? Does he feel like he has the defense to stop it? And that's a question. But I think he is. What I hear, he's a lot more more pass than he is run. But, again, that, he's not the head coach.
Yeah, and, you know, when I looked at McElwain last year, and tell me if I'm wrong, and it could have been Saban, I mean, some of his play calling just didn't make sense. When I watched Alabama play, they could be on a roll exploiting, you know, running game, and all of a sudden they come up with some tricky pass or something that just didn't make sense. Do you think that was more Saban, or do you think it was McElwain?
I think it's probably Saban at times, but I think he really wants to play conservative because – you know, he don't want to be in a position to lose the game, but then, like you say, you come up with some stuff like that. But he really does seem like come up with them at a good time if they work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know,
if
when they don't work, they just look like crap, you know. But it's just, I don't know. I just think he likes to, you know, what always got me is the running up the middle all the time. It just seems like it's always a dead down, you know. There's that wasted play up the middle. But I'm not a coach, and I guess there's a purpose of setting up the defense. You got to run those plays ever so often. But what just as a fan, it just tears you up to see that play up the middle. It don't go nowhere. You know, it never goes nowhere unless there's a big breakdown or something. You know.
All right, guys.
Well,
Chris, go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'm gonna change gears after you do this.
The only point I was going to make was that, you know, Saban last year, you know, I mean, let's face it, he knew that he had the best defense in the country, and so a lot of his play calling last year, you know, is developed around that defense that he had. He knew that it was okay to go three and out and punt the ball, and so, you know, he's not going to take those wild chances, and you know, if I'm the coach and I have a defense like that, I wouldn't either. You know, if I've got the most dominant defense in the country, I'm using that defense to my advantage, and I'm playing the field position game. You know, because the last thing you want to do is turn the ball over and make it easier for the opposing offense to put points on the board. So, you know, I mean, of course I'm not an Alabama fan, so I didn't have to get frustrated at that. But just from an outsider's perspective, you know, I mean, I see why he did it, and, you know, I agree with it. And then, of course, he ended up winning the national title, you know, with that philosophy. So he definitely knows what he's doing.
I agree with that.
Guys, I want to change gears and have a little fun with this. And Chris, you tell me, I think me and Marty, the first four games, we're going to end at Ole Miss, we're going to pick, or five games, we're going to pick Alabama. Do you see any upset in the first five games?
In the first five?
Yeah, we have Michigan at Arkansas, and that's probably it.
Really, the first test that I see, and a lot of people may kind of laugh at me, but to me, the first real tough game is going to be at Tennessee. I mean, you know, I think Tennessee is going to be—they're going to surprise some people this year. If Tyler Bray can get his head on his shoulders and become the leader of that team, Tennessee—they have one of the best receiving corps in the nation. And I think that could be a potential spots that they can kind of expose Alabama a little bit, because let's face it, Alabama lost a lot in the secondary this past year with Mark Barron and Dre Kirkpatrick. So that might be an area that Tennessee can expose a little bit. And you know, Tennessee's tired of losing to Alabama. So I think that'll be kind of a revenge game for Tennessee. But that's the first true real test that I see for Alabama on their schedule.
What do you think about Missouri?
No, that's what I was about to say.
Going to Columbia, yeah. And have to play them, I mean.
Yeah, it's a new environment. But the thing that worked in Alabama's favor there is they have the bye week before they play Missouri. So I think if you give Saban that extra week, that's gonna mean the world. Now Missouri, they do have one of the top freshman receivers in the country, and that Beckham kid. So
he's about 8 foot tall, isn't he?
Yeah, exactly. Sure. And I don't know if you've seen any YouTube tape on this kid, but he looks like Calvin Johnson playing against high schoolers. I mean, the guy is just an absolute beast. So he's definitely going to present some problems, but I just don't see Missouri really. Let's face it, they're going to get initiated real quick into what life is like in the SEC and the caliber of defenses that they're going to be facing week in and week out. So I don't see Missouri. They might be able to hang with Bama for a half just because it's at home, but I think eventually, you know, Bama pulls away and wins that game pretty handily.
I think
Chris made a good point about the bye. Tennessee, Marty, I think is going to be a very closer game just because South Carolina or Tennessee reminds me of the South Carolina back in 2010 a little bit, maybe. I'm not expecting a win out of Tennessee over Alabama, but I am expecting Tennessee to give Alabama some problems, especially in the first half, and it'll be a closer game than last year. I think Alabama's got enough to get it done. What do you think?
I do, too. I'm just not a fan of their coaching. I was at first, but I'm just wondering now if this is not the last year for him, if they don't really perform and do something, if he's even going to be around next year. And so I really hadn't kept up with Tennessee recruiting or anything like that in the last couple of years. I know they've lost some people. It seems like people have left that team. I don't know what kind of depth or what they do have on it, but I may be wrong because I don't follow their recruiting. But they can't be really deep in positions.
No, they can't be. They're not, but they will be better, but they're not deep. And that's tough, you know, when you're not deep. But they got a little more depth than last year, and we talked about that on the last show. They gave out a lot in the second half, but they still don't have that depth yet. They're still a year or two away from getting it.
Yeah, that's what I was going to make a point. I noticed last year the second half was just terrible for them. They just couldn't close games because they seemed like they was running out of juice at every game they played in. So, you know, and that's a schedule that you have to go through. It's rough. I don't know. Do they have a bye week before they play Bama?
Probably. I think they might. I can't remember the schedule, Chris. Do you remember off the top of your head?
Off the top of my head, I don't remember.
I think they do, actually. I think they do, coming off a bye.
That'll help them a little bit.
Yeah, let's go to Mississippi State at home, Marty. What are you thinking about that one?
Mississippi State will always play tough, but I don't see them winning. I just don't see it.
Chris, what do you got?
Against Mississippi State, that game's at Alabama, and you know, I don't really think Mississippi State's going to have it in them to really give them much of a game.
No, it's going to be a beat down. All of us agree on that one, which brings us to the big one at LSU.
Woo.
And Marty, I know you're looking forward to this one. I know you're just waiting for it.
Yeah. I won't sleep before that night. That's a tough one there because, like I said before, I mean, is LSU going to use it for revenge, or are they going to be kind of giddy and be nervous to play Alabama again? You don't know. I guess it depends on what kind of coaching job gets done with them.
Yeah, Chris, go ahead.
Yeah, you know, CBS has already made this a night game, so it's going to be, you know, definitely LSU, it's going to be rocking down there in Baton Rouge. So this game is going to be, you know, it's going to be the college football game of the year probably. I think Les will have his troops ready, you know, and the thing about LSU, their defense this year is going to be just as good, if not better, than last year's. Now, the big question will be is, can Zach Mettenberger, can he – what kind of production is he going to give them offensively at the quarterback position? So I don't want to pick this game right now, but, this is definitely a game that Alabama could lose, and it's just going to be an epic showdown, I believe.
Well, I look at it, and you know, LSU's had – you know, not good success at home against Alabama. And, you know, if I'm going to go with night game in Baton Rouge, I mean, if I'm a coach, I want to have a good experienced quarterback and an offensive line in the running game. And I think Alabama has all of those. And by that time in the season, I think the defense would have matured a lot. And I still not knowing Mettenberger, if I had to pick this today, I'm going to pick Alabama to win this game in Baton Rouge just on that alone right now.
They don't have near the schedule they had last year, do they? I mean, they had a real schedule last year.
They have an easier road, a lot easier road.
Me and Tarvin were talking about this a little bit earlier before the show. You know, if LSU would have won the national championship game, I mean, I was ready to crown them as the best team of all time because their schedule last year was absolutely brutal. I mean, they played one of the toughest schedules I believe I've ever seen. And I think it eventually caught up with them, you know. I mean, because there's only so many bullets you can dodge, you know. And it seemed like every week they were playing, you know, top 10 teams. But, their schedule is definitely a lot easier this year than last year's.
Yeah, I'd have to go with Bama on the game, but, boy, I tell you, it really makes me nervous.
Oh, yeah, it's too early to call it, but. You know, you never know. Alabama could have three losses by that time, or LSU could have their whole team arrested. You don't know what can happen. But if I'm picking today, I'm going to pick Alabama. Next game, Chris Ricketts, Texas A&M in Tuscaloosa. So I think A&M is going to get a good taste, too, what it's like playing the SEC in this game.
Yeah, they're going to get initiated real quick. This will be a great game, you know, just from the fact that, you know, Bear Bryant used to coach at Texas A&M, so there's going to be a lot of historical impact, you know, I guess from Alabama's perspective on this game. So this is going to actually be a great game to watch, I think. You know, I think Alabama will definitely win, but it'll kind of have some unique sub storylines to this one.
I have not kept up with Texas A&M. I watched them a few times last year. I don't know what they've lost, what they got coming back. I mean, they look good at times, but, you know, I guess it's who they was playing. But, you know, they should have won a lot more games than they did. They lost a lot of them right there at the end of the game. The ones I watched, it seemed like they had them won and just let them get away. I don't know if that's the same team coming back this year or not.
I think it is. They lost their quarterback, though. So you're coming into a new conference with a new quarterback, but they do have that coach from Houston on, you know, calling the shots now. So we'll see what he's made of. I don't think his offense will survive in the SEC on a week-in and week-out basis. So,
well,
Marty,
you know,
are you picking Alabama? Are you picking Alabama?
I'd have to go with Alabama on that one. No more than I know now, I'd have to go with Alabama.
Chris, you're going with Alabama, and I guess I'll have to go with Alabama in this one, too. I just don't think a new quarterback can come in and win on the road at Tuscaloosa. I think the environment will overwhelm them a little bit. I know they're in the Big 12, but, you know, the crowds they see are not like they're going to see in Tuscaloosa. Well, the next game I'm going to skip, Western Carolina.
Who's that?
We'll go to that. I don't even know. I think it's the West Carolina Hilltoppers or somebody. I don't know. But it's a bye week before the Auburn game, really. It's just to keep you fresh. So, in Tuscaloosa, here comes Auburn. You know, Marty, who do you got?
Well, I'd have to go with Alabama. I mean, I'd have to go with Alabama on that one. I think Alabama let them get away with a win in 2010 down there. That I know it had y'all guys nervous for most of the game.
That was sick.
Yes.
I don't know that Saban will let that happen again. But again, you know, there's a lot of season between here and now, so there's a lot of things that could play out. But I think if Alabama's undefeated, I don't think they'll let Auburn destroy it. I don't think so. But again,
Chris, who are you picking?
You're gonna let me pick the Iron Bowl? This we're not even close to this season.
No,
right? Well, you know,
we're not picking it. We're not gonna pick this game.
Yeah, it's long way from that point. It really is. It just plays out the.
We'll save this one for another shot. I'll tell you this. I think the game will be a lot closer than it was last year. I mean, obviously, it was just a total mismatch last year. I mean, Alabama, you know, basically took Auburn behind the woodshed. So, you know, I think the game will definitely be a lot closer. And I guess that's all I'll say about that.
Well, Marty, you know, before we wrap it up, we're going to wrap this up. But it looks like looking at the schedule and looking at what we predicted, Alabama at the end of the season, they could easily be there playing for the national championship next year. So a lot can happen between now and then, though. But I like Alabama's schedule this year. I think it's a lot more favorable. They got some tough road games, though. They at LSU, at Missouri, at Tennessee. I mean, those are not easy games, especially at LSU. So, you know, the first game –
I agree. The stars will have to line up just right because you have to have a little luck and stay healthy. There's a lot of factors other than just, you know, picking them right now. There's a lot of factors that go into it. So it's just hard to repeat.
Yeah, it is. It's very hard, and it's hard to stay healthy. And that's one thing. It's obviously hard to stay out of jail.
Yeah.
A lot of these teams are having trouble. So maybe, just maybe, the stars will line up for you this year. But, hey, I appreciate you calling in, sir.
I enjoyed it. Y'all have a good night.
Yep. Thank you too, sir. Talk to you later.
Party.
You're on Way In Sports. Who's this?
Now, Brian, I'm pretty sure that you knew you would get a phone call from Frank Benson talking about my Bama boys.
Who's this?
This is Sonia.
Hey, Sonia. How are you?
How are you?
I knew who you were. I saw the 770 number, and I was like, okay, Alabama conversation. Here's Sonia. How are you?
Yeah. I'm doing it. Fine. This was Brian a little bit. Now, who are you picking for the Iron Bowl? What was that? Did I hear you
walking? I'm not picking yet. I'm not picking that game yet. I might lose credibility tonight. I'm just going to wait.
Exactly. We got to make you wait for that one.
Oh, yeah. Well, you don't have to wait. I think you guys better give a call to Chizik. You might want to get him on this show.
Yeah, I know. Chizik will have you believing Auburn's going to win for sure that day. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I think he went to the same school of marketing as Lang, right? Keep
yeah,
up alive.
Yeah. Joel Osteen, too.
You better be wary of the number of people. That's when you better turn the channel. Well, I just want to call it. I didn't get witness about the show. You guys are leopard each week and left to see you on the boards, and we're in the chat room just cutting up a little bit. So, keep going, and of course, not saying roll tide roll.
Well, I love it, Sonia. I love it. You got to have a little trash talk. So, how's Alabama looking to you this year? Do you think they have enough to go all the way, losing what they did on defense?
I do, but I'm realistic. Agreeing with you guys, you know, just because we stay healthy, we got to make sure that O line protects AJ, number one, and we just have to just make sure. Can you hear me?
I can hear you now a little bit. You were breaking up.
Oh, okay, there we go. I was breaking up a little bit. We're kind of in a bad area out here in Powder Springs. But I was just saying that you were talking about players being arrested. I was like, oh, you must have been talking about UGA or OSU. They spent more time in the bondsman's office than we did.
I know, right? A lot of teams are having trouble with that these days. I don't understand it. I don't know why these kids can't can't keep their nose clean with all they have to lose.
I don't either. Well, I saw the story today about our wonderful one of our being busted possession, and that was not surprising, especially since he and I know a couple of Miami players probably, or Miami fans probably, talking smack, but he was a former Miami player, so hey. And I'm just breaking up that area. I can't move right now, but I just wanted to call in. I will definitely call in the next show.
Okay, good. Well, I love having you. I love having an Alabama person call in the show.
Hey, Sonia.
Uh-huh.
Hey, Sonia. Gene Fizik just called in, and he has a message for Alabama.
You tell him I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Well, guess what my message is for him?
What's that?
If you didn't hear me, my message, I'm your Huckleberry.
Oh.
Hold on. Let's see.
He's got to come up with another one.
I'm your Huckleberry.
There you go. And wait, now, before I go, my wonderful husband, who, because, you know, I'm an SP girl, a Bama girl, Tuscaloosa born and bred, but I'm married to a Minnesota Gopher, Big Ten guy, and he wants to just say hello for a second. So hold on. Here's Jason.
Okay.
Hey,
Jason.
Hey.
How's it going?
Hey, it's going. I only got to say
go Gophers. Go Gophers.
I'm looking forward to the season. It's going to be exciting.
Yeah. It is. It's going to be a good one. How are the Gophers looking?
I'm pumped. You know, I like the direction they're going. You know, Coach Kale, very underrated coach. Decent recruiting class. You know, they came close a lot of games except for the Michigan one. I'm kind of embarrassed for that 58-0 smacking, but they're going to surprise a few teams this year, I think. So, he signed on for another 7 years, which is unheard of for Minnesota. So I'm excited. You know, true fan will always till I die.
Yeah, so it's always good to get a point of view from other conferences besides us. So we had a guy from Oregon call in tonight. I hope you got to hear that. That was a good call, too.
Here's my take, because, you know, this is from the perspective of someone from the outside looking in at the SEC. You know, I've been down here probably for about 12 years, and, you know, I hear a lot of people bashing the SEC as far as arrogant, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, truthfully for me and my perspective, just to be around this type of football, I have gained a whole new respect for the talent and what kind of conference this is. So I don't even enjoy hearing that kind of smack because it's uncalled for. I mean, the SEC, I mean, hands down, best conference. You know, I can't argue that.
It's hard to hear that when people say it's not. It's just, that's an argument it's hard to listen to. You know, we're homers. I'm a homer. I'm an SEC person, but it's kind of hard to argue that the SEC is not the best right now. It could change in the next couple of years. It could be the Big Ten. It could be the Pac-12, Big 12. But right now, at this time, the SEC looks like it's just reloading.
Yeah. You know, and for me, and for people who say, you know, SEC homers, I'll be the first to admit, I love the Big Ten, and I'll preach the Big Ten. You know, just from us being at the bottom, always looking up, I had the chance to watch a lot of teams. And what's kind of unique and kind of ironic is the fact that, you know, I'd be watching Gopher games every Saturday. But since Alabama was always on the television, I watched a lot of Bama games, and I became a Bama fan. So, you know, it's – you just got to love football in general, you know. That's all there is.
Yeah, I like watching Big Ten, too. You know, I respect their conference. They're always, seems like, beating us on the New Year's Day bowls, it seems like. And, you know, a lot of good teams, a lot of depth in that conference. When I look at the Big Ten, I see a lot of depth.
Oh, yeah, and I will say this, too. Everyone wants Zach Urban being up in Ohio State, but mark my words, he's going to turn that conference into the style of football that SEC is because he believes in it. He believes in defense three deep and constantly rotating, keeping people fresh. Defense wins championships. He understands that, and that's what's going to transition into the Big Ten. You watch.
Yeah, Chris, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, when I hear all these other commissioners, you know, kind of whining and complaining, you know, to me, what they need to do is steal the blueprint that's worked for the SEC. So if that's his mindset going in, that he wants to turn this into a defensive conference, then that's the way that these other conferences are going to be able to compete with the SEC, because until they get ready to play defense and make that the top priority, I mean, we're just going to see domination by the SEC in years to come. Because if you look at the recruiting for all these SEC teams like Alabama, LSU, and even Auburn this year, what are they doing? What are they putting emphasis on? Yeah, exactly. They're recruiting the best defensive players in the country. And so that's what it's going to take for these other conferences to catch up with the SEC. They're going to have to put the emphasis on defense. Because, I mean, you know, you look at the Pac-12, all they worry about is offensive players. And like you said, defense wins championships. So that's what they're going to have to do going forward.
Yeah, I mean, you can win a national championship 3-0. I'm sorry. You know, that can happen. And I will say this. I'm not saying Urban's going to do anything this year, because it's going to take him a year or two to build. But once he gets rolling, he will own the Big Ten unless they sign on to that program. I mean, I just don't see it. I think Urban's going to do fabulous up there.
He came into the SEC and he changed the culture here. I think when he was coaching, when the SEC started going to spread offenses in Florida, that Florida-Ohio State game, it showed you the defensive speed that he had when Ohio State was supposed to kill Florida that year, and Florida came in and beat him. So I think Urban will do good as long as he keeps the program out of trouble. You know, I know they went through some NCAA issues, so I think Urban Meyer, he didn't have any sanctions or any allegations in Florida, so I think he'll keep the program clean and running good.
I mean, look at last year. Look at Alabama. Look how many quarterbacks they took out. And even in the national championship, they got to the quarterback. And what got them to the quarterback? Power and speed.
Yep.
I mean, Jefferson never got it going. He was running for his freaking life. So,
yeah.
I mean, it was impressive. I mean, I won't bow down to the SEC, but I totally respect the SEC. I mean, I just, the only thing I have to put up with is arrogant Georgia fans. That's about it.
Georgia fans are intolerable sometimes, man. They're just...
Hell yeah.
I don't know. I live in Atlanta now, and I thought Alabama fans were bad.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look. I mean, if you really look at Alabama, a bunch of transplants, and I honestly see more Auburn stickers and LSU and South Carolina, more so than any Georgia signs on cars. I mean, predominantly Georgia fans are outside the metro area. I mean, I run into Northerners all the time. One of my best friends is a Michigan fan. So, we're everywhere.
Yeah, well, man, I appreciate you calling in, you and Sonia.
Yeah.
I hope you call in next time. And,
great show, guys. Enjoy it.
Hey,
so
I appreciate
it. Take care.
Bye, guys.
Hey, you too.
Bye, guys.
Bye, Sonia.
All right, take it easy.
All right, later.
All right. You're on Way In Sports Talk, is this?
It's Keith.
Hey, Keith. How are you, sir? What's on your mind tonight?
I'm doing good, Brian. Chris, how are y'all?
Doing great, Keith. How are you doing, man?
Good. I was just going to get your take. You know, I'm hearing more and more talk about the SEC expanding to 16 teams. And I know it looks like we're headed to these super conferences, but what do you think is going to happen to these, you know, what they would call mid-major in basketball? What do you think is going to happen to them in football, you know, comparatively? Because, you know, if these other programs fold up, if we go to these super conferences, then who are our teams going to play when they're not playing conference games? I know y'all might have discussed this before, but what's your take on it? What do you think is going to happen?
Chris, go ahead and take this one, buddy.
Well, you know, I kind of alluded to this a little bit earlier. I think if it all depends on how they structure the playoffs. I mean, if they structure the playoffs, you know, with four teams getting in and they put the stipulation that you have to be a conference champion, then what I think you're going to see is basically the emergence of four super conferences with anywhere from 16 – most of them will probably be 16 to 18 teams per conference. And then that's basically going to do away with all of these, you know, like the Sun Belt Conference. And, yeah, you still – those conferences still may exist, but as far as being really relevant in the football arena, I think they'll still – the programs will still exist because there's going to be opportunities to make money, you know, playing – some of these teams from the power conferences, you know, as part of their non-conference schedule. But as far as what effect it will have on, like, other sports, you know, maybe it – I don't know, maybe it doesn't have any effect, you know, because I don't think you'll see the basketball conferences, you know, aligning like that, you know, because their field is basically 64, 66 teams or whatever the number is now. But definitely in football, I mean – You'll see more of an emphasis going to, I guess, build up these super conferences. So, you know, what effect that has, I mean, I'm not sure at this point, but I definitely think it all hinges upon how they structure the playoff. I mean, you know, I know me and Brian, we've said this repeatedly, you know, we think the best thing to do is to take the four best teams. And that way you can still have your conferences the way that they're currently aligned now, and you don't have as much turmoil going on as if you implement some type of, you know, conference champion stipulation or a requirement that you have to be a conference champion to play in the title game.
Yeah, I mean, I know there's arguments.
I think that's going to kill it. I think that will kill football, man, if we have these super conferences. I think it will take a lot out of it. Yeah, you start watching this and you treat it like a business, and that's all it is anyway. It's getting to where it's just a business. But how would you feel if you're a team like, you know, TCU used to be in Boise, that, you know, they had a shot to get to the championship game if the stars lined right? But what this would guarantee is that would never happen. You wouldn't have an at-large team come out of nowhere and play for it and make it fun like a Houston or somebody. You have a four conferences like that, Chris. It just means that some people are just playing for a payday, and I really don't like it. I don't think we're gonna have that. Do you think we're gonna have that, Keith?
I would favor the plus one, to be honest with you. I think y'all talked about that too, over a four team format. But I mean, a four team would be fine. It's, you know, I guess things are gonna change, and there's arguments for both sides. But I just, you know. At least, you know, like in the NCAA tournament in basketball and in the NCAA tournament in baseball, you have a chance for these teams from smaller name colleges to make their chance, you know, make their name and go out there and shock everybody, and it's big news. But, it, you know, a four team, I don't know if we'll ever see that, because I don't know if you'll ever see a team like a Houston if they'd have stayed undefeated last year. I don't know if you'd ever see a team like that have a chance. Because they'll say, well, they play
the
competition. Well, I mean, you look at it like in the state of Alabama, you know, Auburn or Alabama, either one are never going to lose money in football because they could fill up half their stadium and they're going to still make money. They may not make as much. But you look at a team, you have UAB, who's lost money consistently, and then you have Troy, who's Division I now. I doubt if they make any money. I mean, that's just in this state, but when you go to these other states like Texas where they got 10 or 12 teams playing football, what's it going to do even to the, you know, the local economy at some of these smaller colleges?
Yeah, you know, Keith, that's a great point. These small schools depend on that butt-kicking from these big schools, the paycheck they get. And if we go to these super conferences, you can throw those out the door. They're not going to even have room to play those kind of games anymore.
Right,
it's because they're
talking now that the SEC coaches have actually been seriously talking this week about expanding to 9 conference games, because they're going to have to vote this week on a 6-2 or 6-1-1. The 6-1-1 format is you play the other six teams in your division, then you have one permanent opponent, say Alabama versus Tennessee or Auburn versus Georgia from the other division, and then you only have one rotating opponent out of six. So you're only going to see some of these teams. They made a good point on one show I was listening to. You're only going to get a home game against some of those schools once every 12 years. And, you know, it's just crazy. You start thinking about expanding even more, you're either going to have to add conference games, which eliminates games like that altogether, or, you know, I don't know. But can you imagine one of the reasons that the SEC coaches have never wanted to expand because they don't like their team getting beat up every week. Because no matter who you play in the conference, it's rough. You start making 9 or 10 games that are like that, nobody's ever going to go undefeated, and you may start seeing teams with 3 or 4 losses being considered in the picture for a national championship. And really, how does that look? This is not professional sports. This is college, you know?
Yeah, you're right. It's just, it's all turning into money, man. And it's all, you know, what all caused this, Keith, is LSU and Alabama matchup, man, I'm telling you.
Well, I know, and I'm not even saying that was a bad thing. I mean, truthfully, yeah, you could say Oklahoma State had an argument, but they shouldn't have lost the game they lost because they had a big lead. They were on the road, even though it was an emotional day for their team. They had a 24-7 lead in the first half on the road. I mean, how do you lose a game like that? And there's a whole different level between the SEC and a game like that, which I'm not dissing on Oklahoma State. I think they had a real good team. But I think the difference between the SEC and a lot of these other conferences is not even necessarily the team speed like it used to be in the late 90s and early 2000s, but it's the fact that the defensive line and the offensive line in the SEC are just so much bigger in most cases. Unless, you know, you talk about a Wisconsin or somebody from the Big Ten, now they have SEC-side talent on their offensive line and probably bigger. I mean, they're probably the closest team to an SEC program out of the Big Ten as far as I can see, on a consistent basis anyway. And, of course, they've handed it to some of our teams in bowl games to prove it. But I don't know. I just wonder what y'all thought about this. I really don't like the way it's heading going to super conferences. Of course, now, I wasn't happy when the SEC expanded back in 91 and 2. But I would prove to be wrong on that. But, I, you know, 12 would have been perfect for me as far as being a fan. I mean, I don't have anything against Texas A&M Missouri. I think they're probably going to bring something to the conference. But, you know, it's just crazy. You got the SEC, and we're wanting to expand outside of our footprint or make it bigger, they say. We got to expand to extra states. I mean, some of these states aren't in the Southeast. And then you got talk about West Virginia going to the Big 12. I mean, I understand that's not necessarily a regional name on their conference, but it's still all the teams were in one region until now. Start talking about that. I mean, it's just crazy to me. Of course, I guess we've seen crazier things. I just wondered what y'all thought about that and, you know, where we're headed because, you know, nobody really enjoys going to games, say, Alabama and Georgia Southern or Auburn and, well, you know, we can't say Utah State because last year that almost bit us. But, you know, I've been to Auburn, Central Florida, and games like that. You know, the casual fan who does not want to risk their team losing can go to those games and enjoy them. But most of the time, those are tickets that you get your season tickets, and you do good to give them away if you don't want to go to the game. But, like you said, it's those paydays that keep those programs going.
Exactly.
I'm just afraid there's going to be a trickle-down effect. It's going to, if those games go away, then it's going to affect the whole athletic program altogether at some of these schools, which also, in turn, takes away chances for kids to get scholarships that maybe can't go to the big boys and play in a lot of different sports.
Yeah, and those games are necessary for both programs involved, you know. I mean, it's necessary for the bigger schools because they kind of need a break, and then, of course, for the smaller schools because they need the paycheck. So, you know, it's a great point, and I guess time will tell, you know, what the real impact is going to be if we're forced to head to these super conferences. So anything else to add, Tarvin?
No, I'm good, man. Keith, I appreciate the call, man. Call back next week on our show. We'll discuss this a little more.
Yeah, I've enjoyed talking to y'all. I'll give you a call back sometime soon. I just wanted to call and enjoy your show, what I've gotten listened to of it, and I think it's going over real good. I just wanted to call and see what y'all thought about that.
Well, I appreciate
it, Keith.
Buddy.
All right,
call
see
back
y'all.
Soon, man.
All right, take care, Keith.
All right.
Well, that was a good call. We had a lot of callers tonight. We ran over about 15 minutes, but, hey, it was worth it. Thanks to all the fans out there for listening. Chris, any final thoughts before we go?
No, just, you know, eager to see the NBA playoffs, see how they shape up, and just looking forward to another exciting week of sports. You know, I think we could – seems like every couple of days something new and intriguing comes out. So we'll see what is in store for Sunday's show.
Yep, we will. And Sunday night, 9 p.m. Eastern, join us again. We're on every Wednesday and Sunday evening, and we look forward to seeing you. Have a good week, Chris, and all the listeners have a great week as well.
All right, appreciate it, buddy. Take it easy.